right, welcome. It's the fourth episode of The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. My name is John Morgo, and I'm here with...
Leon Brown.
Thank you for spending part of your day with us. We're going to get right into it because we do have a lot to cover. Our special guest is a guy I refer to as the hardest working man in Atlanta sports, radio, and television. The incomparable Sam Crenshaw has generously agreed to donate some of his time for us today. Exactly.
Oh, man, you guys are laying it on pretty thick. This is going to be hard to live up to.
Exactly, but we know you can do it. Sam, like I said, I don't even know where to start because you do 11 Alive. You're on the Georgia State crew now, GP, Georgia Public Broadcasting High School Football Game of the Week. That started up. But let's start with Georgia State football. Even though you did not go to the Memphis game, Panthers lost that game to Memphis on the ESPN. Did you see? I'm sure you were kind of monitoring that game. Did you see anything, any positive information coming out of that?
I guess the positive would be that we got some good runs out of the freshman running backs, and you know we knew this year we were going to see some of the freshman running backs get some carries and some opportunities. And Destin Coates was the top gainer at 68 yards. Still has a tough yards to gain. That's 5, almost 6 yards a carry for him against a tough Memphis defense. That's something that you can pull away that's positive. Also, Seth Page had 7 carries, 35 yards. Those are small things. But, John, in games like that, you look for some things. I would hope that they would go there and have a better defensive effort against Memphis. You got a high-powered offense that Memphis has had in recent years. You know, a lot of people missing in the secondary. A lot of your veterans were missing in the secondary for Georgia State. Some injuries from the previous week up at NC State. And you're playing a lot of true freshmen, redshirt freshmen back then. They're back there running around. And it's hard when you go up against an offense that can be as explosive as Memphis is.
Hey, Sam, Danny.
Yeah, Danny.
Question for you. Let's talk about the Atlanta Braves and the Atlanta United. I want to make a comparison here. I want to see what you think about this. Out of these two teams, of course, Atlanta is now 6.5 up in the NL East after today's result. And Atlanta United FC is 17-5-6 on the year. Both teams, as far as comparison goes to their level of competition, which of those two teams do you think is poised to make a serious title run?
Wow, the serious title run. Both of them I like, and I think both of them are young and fresh teams that people are excited about. I'm probably going to go with Atlanta United simply because they were together last year and they made it to the playoffs last year. Obviously, they learned some things because they didn't last as long as we had hoped they would. They've had a time this year where they've had a little bit of a drop-off, but they've been consistent. They've been the steady eddy of MLS this season, and I would argue with anyone who is the premier, you know, single athlete in this town right now. A lot of people will go with Joseph Martinez, and I know who we like. I know we like, you know, Julio. We like Matt Ryan, you know, and you know we're getting used to Acuna Jr. People with but I mean, if this guy puts a trophy on a fire truck on Peachtree Street, let me tell you something. You know, because that's something I think that this city is starved for. And if it comes by way of an MLS team, then so be it. As for the Braves, they're too young to know that they're not supposed to be doing what they're doing yet. They, you know what I mean? They're just going out there and just playing, and kids, and they're having a good time and fun. And you know what? Don't pinch them and wake them up. You know, let them keep on doing what they're doing. It's so much fun to watch them, and it's fun to go out there and talk with some of the coaches like Ron Washington. And I asked him in midseason, so what kind of grade you give him? I said, I don't want to give a grade yet. I don't want to do this with these guys. He said, come back and see me in September. So I want to go out and see him this week and talk with him and see what kind of grade he gives his team now since they've been able to maintain that. It's been an exciting time. And, you know, I think if you ask both at the start of last year, would we expect to be in this position now? And I think people across town probably say no. You got a brand new team that you don't know anything about, a brand new sport at the professional level. You know, at Atlanta United, you didn't know how competitive they were going to be starting out. And this Braves team, you just saw them struggle so badly after they just had a fire sale and let everybody go. And you said, okay, this is going to be a long, slow climb back for these guys. You know, and, you know, call it ahead of schedule. I just call it great, and I call it, you know, getting ready to play some October baseball in Atlanta. I love it.
Well, I think the Braves and Alex Anthopoulos did some great trades. The Dansby Swanson trade, where they just kind of fleeced him out of Arizona, got some really good arms. And really, when they did the fire sale, at that time, the farm system was just completely depleted. And those trades were able to restock it. They did some great drafting. Kyle Wright, of course, and also Max Fried and some other, and Foltovitz. So I think you have to put this in the front office for being able to get to target the people they wanted and get them into the system where they can develop.
Absolutely, and the fact that they've matured. I mean, you haven't brought that catcher up from your farm club, but I think the tandem that we have, catcher by committee, has served them very well. And I just think the excitement of a guy like Ronald Acuña Jr., what he's brought, has just been amazing. It just makes it so electric. And, you know, it plays right into what the Braves wanted, right? You set up a place in a part of town where you can build your own neighborhood practically around your ballpark. You can get my own zip code. You got it rigged up so you can make money even when there are no games. Oh, by the way, the team is good. So, I mean, you know, right. Everything is, it's a perfect storm out there right now. And amongst all the traffic on 285 and 75.
Exactly, up there. Sam, during a previous answer, you mentioned Julio Jones, Matt Ryan. Switching gears to the Falcons, they actually did very well in their game. They beat Carolina 31-24. But the most impressive stat, especially coming into that game, is Matt Ryan and the Falcons' offense being a perfect 4-for-4 in red zone chances, something that we haven't seen even in the preseason or in the first game of the year last week against Philly. So it looks like, I don't know what your impressions are, but could this be the start? And really, Julio, I don't know, I haven't seen the stat line, but Calvin Ridley got involved and Austin Hooper got touchdowns. Is this a bet? I mean, are they finally turning the corner, in your opinion, in terms of their red zone efficacy?
Yeah, I mean, this is just the second game of the year, John, but I'll say this. The offense this week looked more like what we saw two seasons ago.
Right.
That's the thing that makes Matt Ryan so effective, is when he uses multiple targets. I know Julio gets the money. We want to see Julio catch the ball, especially after he kind of didn't show up for training camp. But you know what? Falcons' offense is at its best when you move and spread the ball around. And when you show the opponent, you will burn them with the other receivers. Then you make it easier for Julio on the back end.
Exactly.
Today's what we saw with this Falcons team is the offense that we expect to see and that we should see, finishing drives in the red zone. And, you know, the first game, you know, I don't know if it's the new NFL or not. It's what I was talking to my radio show today on 92.9 The Game.
Right.
The fact that across the league, you know, your veteran players and star players were held out of preseason games. They saw limited time on the field. And I really think that caught up with the Falcons in the season opener, the fact that the guys spent so little time together on the field during the preseason. And it looked sloppy. You know, a lot of penalties. You know, it couldn't finish drafts. It looked like preseason football.
Exactly.
Except it was the first game of the year. So I think, you know, today's game hopefully is more like it. Still concerned about the losses we have on the defensive side of the ball with some injuries early in the year. And obviously, Devontae Freeman makes the engine go a little bit better. But for this week to slow down Cam Newton and the crew, I thought they looked really good.
Yeah, they did. Speaking with Sam Crenshaw from just about every media organization you can think of, exactly. Leon, you had something?
Hey, Sam, this is Leon Brown.
Hey, Leon.
Yeah, speaking of the Falcons offense, with Matt Ryan targeting 8 different receivers today with such a great, impressive victory against Carolina, and with Julio putting up the numbers that he's putting up, do you think this is going to go well for offseason contract renegotiations for Julio?
Well, he's counting on it. He's counting on it. I mean, that's what the whole deal was about, him holding out, you know, and that's the thing. The fact is, okay, we're going to sweeten up and bring this money from the back end of the deal. We're going to rip it all up at the end of the year and do a new one. But you got to go out and deliver some things. And so that's the thing. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay healthy, and he has to go out and deliver. But I still feel like, do you judge everything with him on his personal numbers? And that's what you get to. If he gets lower numbers today, but the team does what it does, is that a bad thing? You know, is that a bad thing? I know in crunch time you want to be able to go with it. And there will be some games where they're going to have to go to him in crunch time, and that's when you want to see him show up. But under ordinary circumstances, if you've got a lead in the game and you can go with some other people to get you downfield, and he's that guy that sometimes they get double coverage, it opens it up for other people. Now, you got to convert on those, and which they did today. But to me, that factors in what you give him when you get ready to do a new contract with him.
Another thing, we made this comment last week about how the Falcons' schedule is strange in the sense that all the home divisional games are front-loaded, and when we get to the back end of the schedule, that all the divisional games are on the road. I mean, that sets up the Falcons. They have to make hay during this section of the season, get those wins, so that you figure when they go on the road, they're going to lose one or two. But you got to get these home wins right now.
You do. That makes it very important. And I'm glad they have some early. I think some years past, maybe last season, seemed like they had almost all the division games in the back half of the schedule, home and away. I'm glad to get some done early. And aren't things kind of intriguing in the division right now? We saw the Carolina Panthers today. The Saints pull one out by the way, Will Lutz with a field goal.
Exactly. Georgia State
pulling that game out for them. But we've seen them, you know, have some problems. Last week at Tampa Bay, this week against the Cleveland Browns. And, oh, Tampa Bay, do they have a quarterback controversy going on down there right now?
I mean, if Jameis
Winston comes back tomorrow, are you going to start him?
No, you don't think so, yeah.
He's your guy. He's supposed to be your guy for the future. You know, you made the big first-round pick with him. You're supposed to have everything designed for him. Yeah. You can't trust him to go out to a club after a game. But, you know, right now this team is winning, and right now your locker room is confident with Fitzpatrick. How long it lasts, we don't know. That's kind of been his MO.
Exactly.
Around
the
league.
Yeah.
He goes to a team, he gets off to a great start, then he tails off.
That's why I'm saying there's no controversy in Tampa Bay. I mean, we see, you know, the great wins that Fitzpatrick, the great numbers he's put up, and that may go well for him going to another team. But we've seen Fitzpatrick in Buffalo. And the egg he laid up there, I mean, I think he had, what, a couple good games in Buffalo?
But,
and they paid him? And what happened?
Yeah, exactly.
But I think Tampa Bay would probably stick with him until he goes bad. If he's going well, I think he stays in that spot.
Yeah.
And maybe Jameis needs a little bit of that. You know, maybe he needs a little bit of that to say, you know, hey, we know you are the future of this team, but, you know, we can win and do some things without you. So when he gets in, you know, the stuff that he does, you know, that, to me, that's the big thing. Talented, obviously. You know, Jameis is obviously a talented guy. You know, since he's been in the league, he's been inconsistent. When the doors of the bus open, you don't know which one is going to get off. And then during the offseason, you have somebody tag around with him and shadow him everywhere he goes, because it seems like, you know, he lacks the discipline or the focus, whatever, to avoid some of the pitfalls that are out there. And you got to learn that when you're in that kind of position. You know, so a lot of people see you as a dollar sign, a living, breathing, walking dollar sign. And, you know, they may walk into you, or bump into you, whatever. You got to be smart enough to know how to deal with that. And so hopefully that's what's happening with him right now. You know, the fact that he can't play, the fact that Fitzgerald is coming in and got the team responding to him. Maybe those things ring a bell with him, and when he gets in, he really values what he has.
Well, Tampa Bay's schedule, you saw it. I mean, they host Pittsburgh for Monday Night Football next week and then go to the Bears before the bye week. So, I mean, Pittsburgh basically got surprised at home by Kansas City. I think they're going to be...
Was that a surprise?
Well, Patrick Mahomes is kind of... I don't think...
Let me ask you guys that. Was that a surprise? See, the Chiefs can light up a scoreboard right now.
I don't think... I'm sorry, Sam. I don't think it was a surprise. I think how the Chiefs started that game was a surprise, going up 21-0, shell shocking them. I think that was a surprise, but not the fact that they kind of held off and got that W.
Let me ask Leon and Daniel both. What does that do for Tomlin's job security?
We're wrong. Get on that. But
well, I'm just asking. Is it too early to bring that up?
Sam, I've said it, man. I've said it that I thought Tomlin was on the hot seat, especially with everything he has going on over there in Pittsburgh, and I'm not sure what he has to do to keep his job, but I really felt like coming into the season that his seat was pretty hot right now. And this game here, I don't know if you can measure this game, because I thought that Kansas City was going to be this good with that quarterback in the room.
Well, I look at, like, with Pittsburgh, if, say, for example, okay, if the Pittsburgh division looked like the SEC South of the NFL, which is the NFC South. If Pittsburgh were in the NFC South while staring 0-3 down the corner pocket, I would say Mike Tomlin's job would be in trouble. But because of their division has been so inconsistent when it comes to other teams being successful.
And you're being charitable.
Or right. they could be, well, let's see, they've been very consistent with their with those other teams being inconsistent.
Yeah. Well, you could say that because, well, we point to their very first game. You know, they played to a tie with Cleveland. You know, last time you seen the Steelers have a problem with something like that.
Right.
So, I don't know. We'll see what happens because a lot of people think the Steelers team, when they put it all together, could be playing here in Atlanta on the last weekend of the season, of the postseason. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
If the Steelers go 0-3 next week, I believe they'll still finish the season with a above 500 record. If we look at Baltimore right now, I don't, you know, Baltimore doesn't really scare me at this point, at this juncture right now, especially with Joe Flacco looking like he's on the way out. Cincinnati has been traditionally inconsistent. And Cleveland, well, based on what we've seen today, is going to be Cleveland.
Well, they're finding ways. They're finding new ways to lose, which is what the Browns have always done. And they got that Thursday night game with the Jets, which will probably be their best chance to get off the schneid that they have been for that they have been on for as long as we can remember. Sam, I got one more question for you before we have to let you go. Like I said, among all the things you do, you also do Georgia State basketball, men's and women's home games on ESPN. How excited are you for this season that's rapidly approaching?
Can't wait. I can't wait. Can I tell you how much I can't wait for this? It's going to be a lot of fun. I really think so. I think this the Panthers team is going to come back with a lot of excitement and look to go back-to-back as far as the conference goes. I've got some interesting matchups potentially. I don't know if they're going to be able to get to play Georgia out at Cayman Island, but they're going to be out there with you. When I first saw that both teams were in that thing, I was like, boy, this is great. Except you got to go to the Cayman Islands to play a game. We'd much rather play here in town.
Exactly.
That's great. I think having Mercer back on the schedule is going to be a lot of fun.
And I think that's the opener. I think that that's going to be the home opener, the season opener for Georgia State men's.
To rekindle that rivalry, I think, would be great. I mean, and great, let the argument begin. I don't think there's an argument. Yeah. Who's the best college basketball team in the state?
Oh, no question.
Who it is.
No question.
You know? And, I mean, Tom Crean is down there trying to recruit, and he's got D-Wade down there talking to people, bringing him in to help support him. That's wonderful. You know, and I don't know if D-Wade's bringing his wife along with him, too. That'd be worth
going. That'd be nice. That'd be nice.
Yeah, that'll sell some tickets.
And we'll be trying to get guests like that on the show, that's for sure.
But I'm excited. And also for the Georgia State women, we got a coach comes in that promises an up-tempo style of basketball. And is a great recruiter. And I just think he's going to bring that team along. Got a lot of veterans back for him to work with. And I'm looking forward to both teams this year just going out and having a lot of fun this season. And like you said, John, it's right around the corner. It'll be here in just a few days, it seems.
Oh, I can't wait. I mean, you and I both do the women, and I do it on the radio. You're on the ESPN side. And it's just that they do have a really good class coming in. They have a girl from again, nothing is official yet, but they have a girl from St. Pius, Emma Drash, a girl from St. Francis here in Atlanta, Kennedy Powell, and this very intriguing prospect from Louisville's Malay High School, Joelle Johnson, all very good. And when I spoke with Gene Hill to start off the season, he stressed recruiting, and so far he's really shown it.
And you talk about two great programs for a long time here in the metro area in St. Pius and St. Francis. Both been fantastic programs, and so to be able to tap in to programs with that type of winning tradition and bring those type of building blocks into the equation looks like a bright future and looks like something that could be very exciting to follow this year.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Sam Crenshaw, thank you very much for spending part of your Sunday with us. I know you're extremely busy. How do you keep everything straight? That's my big question for you.
This time you just kind of prioritize some things. Like today, I'm doing some work on the GPB game that's coming up next week. The next week GPB game is a big one. It's Colquitt County against Grayson.
Woo.
And so what I'm doing today is I'm just getting some sideline material from both coaches. Before they even do a conference phone call, I call the coaches on Sunday. And, you know, right now at this hour, you know where the Colquitt County football team is?
Where?
They're on the field practicing.
That's why they're one of the best teams in the nation, yeah.
Yeah, they're working right now. And I'm going to talk with the athletic director when they get off the field in about 20 minutes. And just get some things about what some of the players are doing off the field, some stuff to to throw out there doing the sideline coverage for that. And then, of course, either Monday or Tuesday, I'll get by practice over at Georgia State, get a chance to watch the team work out, see who's going to be filling in some of those spots in the secondary where those injuries are, and get me a little information there from a couple of players and one of the coordinators, have that in my back pocket for Saturday afternoon.
Yes.
So, you know, you just set up your time in your week when you do those things to set things up for your coverage end of the week. So, yeah, but it's a delicate dance, but we enjoy it this time. It makes this time of year interesting and a challenge.
It does.
Right. Be better.
All right, Sam Crenshaw, thank you very much for joining us. Hope to have you on soon, again in the near future.
All right, okay. Sam, don't be a stranger.
Let's do it.
All right, that was Sam Crenshaw, the hardest working man in Atlanta radio. Appreciate him spending his busy days with us.
It was.
We covered a lot of different topics. There's one thing I wanted to ask him I didn't get a chance to, because, you know, he does, for Georgia State football, he does sideline reporting, and I wanted to ask him, what's the different perspective being on the sideline than it is being in the stands or in the booth?
That's a good question.
That we are.
Because I've never worked sideline, period. You know, and there,
and there's this great, have you seen the, I guess it's a meme of him, where he's, I guess, in, I don't know if it's Idaho or Montana, and he's in the snow, and he's got this expression where he's really wondering about some of the life choices he's made. Yeah. I mean, it's a hilarious photo. All right, we went a little longer with Sam than was budgeted, but that's perfectly okay, because we got a lot of good information from him on a lot of different topics. And so let's just keep going. We talked about the Atlanta Braves and Atlanta United, and he was talking about, you know, possibly both. The United possibly has the experience. The Braves don't, but they don't know they don't. And that makes them a lot more dangerous.
You know, when you talk about the Atlanta Braves, of course, they're 6.5 up in the NL East. Look like they're poised for a playoff run. I tell you, the one strength that they have right now is that they're young, talented hitters out there. Acuña Jr. at their leadoff spot. Record, I think he has a record 8 leadoff home runs. I think he's tied for the record for that. You got Acuña Jr. Ozzie Albies is hitting the ball now. He was struggling for a little bit at the plate. You just have tons of talent on that Braves team. Now, it's the level of competition that's probably going to probably catch up with them. The Dodgers make it through. They have a great pitcher staff. Of course, they got Clayton Kershaw, who's probably one of the best pitchers in baseball still, even though he struggled this year. The Cardinals can possibly make a run. The Brewers are looking good out there. The Cubs, you can never count them out. And then the Rockies out in the West are leading their division right now. It's just a lot of great teams out of the National League, and you just really can't count them out.
Exactly, and with the Atlanta United, again, one point clear, of the second place New York in the MLS, and with Joseph Martinez, with all the goals he has fired in, they're going to be very tough to stop. And now last year, I think they lost relatively early in the playoffs, so now that they got the experience, they can build on that and hopefully go for a deeper run.
Exactly, they can do a lot of things. They can go as far as the MLS Cup Championship if they want to. So, you know, we'll just see. It's just like the time right now for Atlanta sports team. And the Falcons, they look very good today. So,
absolutely.
Very, yes, they did.
What they did, especially when we were just talking about that with Sam today. So, that was a good look.
Just to think that a soccer team just may bring it all home before the football, basketball, or baseball team.
Yeah.
Quiet as kept.
Yeah, and especially if
Man.
Well, we're technically not an expansion team anymore.
Right.
Second year.
So, I mean, a fresh new team.
Right.
So, we are talking about a championship team. That's impressive.
Extremely.
Very impressive.
All right, so yeah, very impressive. But what you see with the Las Vegas Knights over in the NHL going to the Stanley Cup in their first year. So even though it's as much as you would think it's a novelty in what they've done, it really isn't anymore.
No, it's not. There's no such thing.
Right.
And if you're a new team, you can't do this. And so there's no such thing about that no more. The Knights, of course, like John said, as mentioned, that they came up short, the Cats beat them, but, you know, it was Ovechkin time anyway, so it was about time he got one.
So, and again, you're talking about what's going on in the NFL. We talked about the Falcons. Falcons are going to host New Orleans next week at the Mercedes-Benz, and that suddenly looks like a very not so much a winnable game, but something that you got to believe that the Falcons are going to be very poised going in, considering what they've done and what's, as we mentioned, New Orleans just having such a tough time with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, well, Sam mentioned it earlier. We look like the 2016 team, and I agree with them 100%. We look like that off. Matt Ryan was poised. He didn't get sacked. I don't think anybody noticed that.
Right.
He didn't get sacked. He didn't get that much pressure on him. He was able to avoid the pressure and step up and make throws. Calvin Ridley got involved in the offense. Austin Hooper was a big part of it. And Tevin Coleman and Ito Smith, those two running together just gashed Carolina's defensive line. And I don't know if it was so much so Carolina struggled on the defensive end or what, but we didn't need too much of Julio Jones today. He did make some plays,
right,
some catches. But I'm telling you, this Falcons team looked great despite the fact that you lost Devontae Freeman. He's probably going to be out for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
And you lose Neal for the year, and you lose Jones until about week 11.
Well, it's important for Matt Ryan to spread the wealth. You don't want to come. You just don't want to be too transparent with your offense. You know, right? Like I seen today, like you know, he made a deep pass, 30-plus yarder to Julio Jones, and then on the very next play, attempted to go right back to Julio on what looked like the same play, and it was intercepted.
Right. You can't be as obvious like that.
Right.
Now that play where he got picked off. Two things we have to mention on that one. One, Hooper missed the block on that man, on that defensive lineman. That's one. Two, that defensive lineman got to his arm. So he was ready. He had to throw. I think he did at least. He had to throw because he's been throwing bombs like that. But trying to get his deep passing game down or whatnot. I think he would have had a shot at that one. But the defensive player hit his arm.
Right.
And he couldn't get the pass that he wanted to get. I like what Sarkisian did today. He let them be free. You know, he let them go. He let them explode.
Right.
And that's what we needed.
I think today we've seen an NFL first today. Mm-hmm. Just in, Vontae Davis of the Buffalo Bills retires mid-game.
Yes. I saw that. He retired mid-game, and that's as the Bills were losing again. But before we go into that, one more point about the Falcons. I think their defense has been maligned, and they did just enough to win, especially with DeMonte Casey getting ejected for the unnecessary roughness penalty. Yeah, I mean, it was a good call. I think we all agree that that was a good call. So even with him gone, depleting an already thin secondary. Two guys that really came up, Ricardo Allen, and speaking of much maligned, Duke Riley seemed to have a good game when people were starting to write him off.
He did. There were some times when he missed some spots, but as the game went on, I did see some improvement from him. I'm not ready to write off Riley, but at the same time, I think there's room for improvement for him. I don't think he's there yet, but I think he will be there eventually, especially now with Jones being out. And the pressure's now put on him because he's now the signal caller because he's been moved over to the inside linebacker position. So now you have that kind of camaraderie with him. Ricardo Allen, John, as you mentioned, is now the leader of that defense.
Yes.
And you can tell by the way that he was communicating. He was going up, telling the defenders, hey, you need to move this way, move that way, this way. Ricardo Allen, to me, was the defensive MVP today.
Right, right. So Devontae Davis, as Leon mentioned, retires at halftime in a 31-20 loss to the Chargers, Leon's team. So is the Bills rapidly becoming the new Cleveland Browns?
On purpose.
Oh, wow.
It didn't have to go. It didn't have to happen for them like that.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you go from making the playoffs last year for the first time in, like, 19 years – to trading your starting quarterback that got you there to the Cleveland Browns.
Right.
And now you're right back to being a dumpster fire. I mean, it did too. Now we have your cornerback just, he's so fed up. He just retired mid-game.
He had his suit on and everything.
Yes, I'm ready to go. I'm done with this. That's like, that's going to be in a movie one day.
I think you're right, man. They are slowly I think what's shocking me is how fast it's happening.
Right.
They were number 6 seed, and they took Jacksonville to the fourth quarter last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think people realize that. A Jalen Ramsey interception, a great interception, by the way, was the separation, was the key story of that game. The final score was 10-3. Mm-hmm. They had them. You know, to see Buffalo actually go down the way they did.
Man.
47 points. You surrender to the Baltimore Ravens, who, to me, their offense, I mean, they have a pretty decent offense, but not a 47-point offense.
Exactly. The defense, but Bill's defense just wasn't there.
Yeah, it just wasn't there, and something's not right with them. Maybe it was, I thought that it was probably because of the fact that they want to try Allen out, you know. And Peterman is not there.
Peterman's
not that guy.
They're going to be trying out 3-13 this year, the way things look.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, you know what other team is really harping on a horrible season? New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's just wait. I mean, I could just see the losing streak coming. I mean, they got saved this week. Yeah. Last week, you know, Tampa Bay, a divisional rival at that, put it on them. I mean, you have Carolina and Atlanta like, oh, thank you. That's 2 wins.
Yeah.
2 wins.
Well, you know, Drew Brees is still going to – he's still going to get his points, so it's going to be up to the offense to just kind of exploit the New Orleans defense and secondary.
Yeah, which happened with him last week because looks like their defense took a bit of a relapse, giving up 48 points. Speaking of which, what is up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Like, did we see this coming? You know, I don't think we did.
Right.
I don't think we saw Tampa Bay coming like this, man. To me, if you had to tell me which team was the most impressive, it's Tampa Bay through the first 2 weeks. I'm really impressed with them.
Well, yeah, we mentioned that when we were talking with Sam, how they host Pittsburgh at kind of down Steelers before going to the Bears before their bye week. And they get the bye early, which means that when they come back from that's 12 straight games without a break. They'll need to be properly conditioned. They'll need to be trained. And an interesting thing about that is they're going to have 2 whole weeks to discuss Jameis Winston versus Ryan Fitzpatrick. That soap opera is going to go for 2 weeks, and that's the worst thing for the Bucs.
Yeah, I think so.
And when they come off it, they host the Falcons.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting.
Also, what we saw today, another tie game.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Minnesota and Green Bay, and this week, and Leon and I were talking about it on the way here, John, this week has been the story of the kickers.
Has been.
Yeah.
Has been. Well, let's talk about, we still got 2 games left, and I'm going to be honest, guys, Giants, Cowboys. Well, first of all, I had a very long night and a very long, long morning. Our listeners don't want to hear it, but I got back from my Reinhardt game at about 4 a.m, went to my other job, slept on the couch for 2 hours, took a nap when I got home. I am not watching this game, Giants-Cowboys. This might be the worst game on the NBC schedule this season, and I'm going to feel no compunction about doing so.
It's definitely a must-win for the Cowboys because the Cowboys have expectations the Giants do not,
right?
In my opinion. I mean, I look for Odell Beckham to have a good game based on what he's been paid over this offseason, which we'll be discussing later on. But as far as the Cowboys, they're definitely expected to win this game.
Right.
Or it's going to be crazy. I mean, let's be honest. We have a supposedly hotshot quarterback. You have a hotshot running back. I mean, I need to see something. I need to see.
They have a banged up offensive line. And their offensive line has been the best offensive line in the last 3 or 4 years.
That's true.
Banged up offensive line.
But when they take this loss, if they do, that's if they take this loss, that offensive line would not get the blame.
No, of course not. I go and give you my prediction, and I think Dallas. These 2 games that we have, the Bears and Seahawks, Cowboys and Giants, I think these are like must-win games for 3 out of these 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Dallas needs this victory, like you say.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think Dallas needs this. I think Dallas gets this victory 24-20, but it's got to be on Ezekiel Elliott. He's got to be the guy that's going to get the victory.
Also, do we believe that Dallas is a front runner for the newly, well, he will be jobless in about, what, 5 hours?
5 hours. Josh Gordon.
Yes, sir.
I think he'll go to Dallas if Jerry Jones don't think about this. I didn't understand why Cleveland let him go.
Well, I don't want to interrupt you, Daniel. I just saw a report from said that Gordon showed up late to the facility on Saturday morning and was, I put this in quotes, not himself.
Gotcha.
Red flag for possible substance use, and that was the concern. That was according to sources telling Cleveland.com. So that, I mean, would that, if it's a relapse, we don't know. Let me preface by saying we don't know the exact situation, what's going on with Josh Gordon. But if it is a relapse, would that be enough to scare off Jerry Jones?
Yes. Yeah. I think so. I don't think anybody wants to deal with that kind of headache. You know, if you had a relapse, that's a tough one.
If I'm Jerry Jones, I sign that man to a nice little franchise tag and then, you know, see how it works out throughout this year. But if I'm Jerry Jones, we have to win. We have to win.
So you would?
Yeah, absolutely.
You would take Josh?
Absolutely. And, you know,
what if he's not the question? Because, see, you still have to keep him in. What if he doesn't?
If he doesn't perform?
He's going to perform. He's going to show up. But what if he relapses just like he did? He showed up to Cleveland. He showed up to the what?
Not himself.
Give him what? Well, he's on, which is quite, I understand, which is quite interesting because I believe he has to submit a urine analysis 3 times a week.
No, he does.
So, he's, you know, in Cleveland. I don't know what the rules will be in Dallas, but if I'm Jerry Jones, it's not good that we have to go off and put so many constraints on one player. But with a talent such as Josh Gordon, I mean, you've seen what Michael Irvin did for those dynastic Dallas Cowboys. And, you know, we know the story on Michael Irvin.
Right.
And the story that was Michael Irvin is the reason why Randy Moss didn't get drafted to the Cowboys. And you see how much Jerry Jones sort of regretted that decision to not draft Randy Moss. So, and Randy Moss has had his share of issues before he was drafted. While he was in college, I mean, he wound up at Marshall because when he's at Florida State, screwed up. When he's at Notre Dame, screwed up. Had to wind up at Marshall. Well, if I'm Jerry Jones and I'm running a business and my primary business is promoting my profit margin, I take a chance on Josh Gordon because at the end of the day, we're trying to win,
right?
And give him a nice little, you know, I wouldn't give him a big chunk of change. But if he performs this year with no turbulence or very minimal turbulence, then we could talk about something. The same thing with Jameis Winston. Like Mr. Crenshaw was saying, you know, this may be what Jameis Winston needs because it could possibly foreshadow him being out the league potentially. Absolutely got to humble you because you could be this Hall of Fame talent, which I believe Jameis Winston and Josh Gordon is potentially.
Looks, I apologize for cutting you off, Leon. It looks like the Denver Broncos might be coming back against the Raiders and pulling this game out. We're kind of watching it. I think the Raiders were up 19-0, but now the Broncos are driving. There's 8 seconds left, and they've got a play way deep in Raider territory, certainly within field goal range. So it looks like the Broncos might just pull this out. And I'm sorry about cutting the conversation on the Cowboys Giants short, but I wanted to ask you quickly before we have to move on. Bears Seahawks. Is this going to be a big defensive battle, or will Russell Wilson find his way against Khalil Mack?
I think it'll be a defensive battle, but the Chicago Bears, I think, were hurt the most by their loss last week. Seattle was in a very tight, close game with Denver, who unfortunately came up short. But Chicago had a 20-0 lead in that game and could not close the deal.
Right.
The great Aaron Rodgers. He just, I don't know, that was like a scripted movie for him to come out with that bad knee and just come back and just do what he needed to do. I think the Bears get it done, and I like Mitchell Trubisky. I think he's going to make enough plays to get that done. I think this game goes to overtime. I'm going to say 30-24 Chicago.
All right, so it looks like we're all in agreement that the home teams are gonna win this Monday, this last two games of week two of the National Football League season. Switching gears to the college game, guys, can anybody beat Alabama?
No.
I mean, is this just going to be a coronation until they play Clemson or whomever in the national championship game?
LSU and Auburn, let's not sniff over them, you know.
Right.
They just had a great game this Saturday, and LSU pulled it out and went in the Jordan-Hare, the tough Jordan-Hare stadium, and pulled that game out. But, man, when you see what Alabama is doing, man, it is just unheard of right now. You put the first team in SEC history.
50 points.
In the first three games.
Right.
And they're doing it with two of the time later. So, been the spark plug in this offense, and they have a terrific defense. I don't ever remember a time Nick Saban having an offense and a defense just dominant like this. And I just don't see anybody, especially in the SEC, holding a candle to Alabama. Now, maybe Georgia, because I wanted to ask Sam that too. What do you think about Georgia? Now, I think this is going to be a beeline straight to the SEC championship, Georgia-Alabama. Georgia may be the only team that could maybe hold a candle to them as far as the SEC goes. As far as the national scope, Clemson to me.
Yes.
These are the top three teams in the country to me, and I think everybody else is catching up.
So, if you're Georgia, speaking of Georgia, are we still going to redshirt Justin Fields after next week based on his performance this week?
Yeah, they as I said, they as I predicted, they would play him against MTSU, the Blue Raiders, and he did get some time, did play pretty well in that football game. As Georgia, again, they got one more non-con game during this part of the season before it's all SEC from here on out.
If I am the coach, I will redshirt that young man and tell him to have a Coke and a smile, because I'm going to be smiling, because I'm going to keep my job for the next X years.
Their level of competition, to me, they're not going to, I don't think they're going to be tested until they go to Auburn. Or does Auburn come here? I can't remember, but that's where their test is coming, to me. So I think they should be able to prove what's going on. I think South Carolina was a major test for them. They go on the road, tricky place to play when you're going up to Columbia. But I think that next, their next one is probably not going to be until November. They have to take on Auburn. I think they should roll Florida, Missouri, basically the entire SEC East. They should not have a problem.
No, they shouldn't, especially, well, next week they have to go to Columbia, play Missouri, and it's kind of interesting that they start off the SEC play with two road games.
Yeah.
And that is very interesting. Then they come back and play two home games, which they shouldn't have any problems with, Tennessee and Vanderbilt, although Vanderbilt did give Notre Dame all they could handle yesterday. And it was kind of funny because in 1995, Vanderbilt went up to Notre Dame for the first time, lost 59-0, and here they are second time, and they had a chance to win that game. I think the Commodores impressed a lot of people with that particular performance. But looking at the schedule right now, it is seven straight SEC games before they wrap it up with UMass and Tech. And Auburn is between the hedges this year.
So, which will actually be a good thing for Georgia.
Well, actually, Georgia does play at LSU on October 13th. So that might be the game where they get tested.
They will get tested.
I think LSU was on the schedule this year.
Yeah, that's the way the little rotation kind of worked itself out.
That's actually going to be a game for the Final Four. But whoever wins that game, if these teams remain pace with whom they are, will replace. If LSU wins against Georgia, they will replace Georgia.
I think it'll be different for LSU. They're in the SEC West. Mm. And I think that literally the LSUs, the Auburns, the Mississippi State, do not count out Mississippi State. Those teams are going to probably beat each other up, cancel each other out. And, of course, Alabama is there, and I think Alabama is probably going to beat all of those teams. And Alabama has a – let's see what they can do this weekend against Texas A&M.
Well, you were mentioning that Alabama, first team in the SEC to history, or I think a long time, to have 50 points the first three games. Georgia had 40 points or more the first three games. So Georgia's offense is up there. But again, that's let's talk about who they played. Austin, let's go P, and in Middle Tennessee State, and in South Carolina. And I think that was just a statement win against South Carolina. They were tired of listening of what they were hearing from the Gamecocks, so they just went down and smoked them. But let's talk about the Big Ten. The Big Ten really took it on the chin this week. Wisconsin goes down, Nebraska goes down. Very tough week for the Big Ten, even though Ohio State did do well in their game against TCU.
Oh, you know that hit that you know that that would hit close to home with Nebraska actually being 0-2 for the first time since 1957. It's never happened before. I mean, not in my lifetime. I never thought something like that happened. So, you know, with the Big Ten, you know, it's like, are they really who we think they are? I mean, the Big Ten has lost every last one of their games this week, with the exception of Ohio State, and they were and they were favored by 10 points or more.
Right.
So,
Wisconsin, I thought, was the shocker to me. For them to allow BYU to hang in there like they did, and then they came up short with the missed field goal. Mm. It happened in college too, right? I thought Wisconsin was going to be a team that you know that a lot of teams could fear in the country. They just had a little slip up, but kudos to Ohio State going into the Arlington, Texas, and even though it was a neutral field, but going into that, you know, maybe 60-70% crowd TCU fan, and going in there and getting that victory without Urban Meyer, who comes back.
Yes, Urban's coming back with the next week.
So to go in there and get a high profile victory like that, you know, the committee's going to have their ears up about that. They won that game 40-28 on a national stage. So
and TCU did come to play.
Yeah, they did.
Absolutely.
Robinson looked pretty good.
Yes, sir. And you know, did this game hurt his Heisman candidacy?
No, I don't think so. Sean Robinson.
Right.
No, I don't think so. Right now, I'll tell you, the Heisman race it kind of wide open. You know, I think we really won't see who makes their quote unquote Heisman moment until we get to conference play.
Okay.
And keeping the discussion in town, Georgia Tech goes to Pittsburgh, loses badly to Pittsburgh, and now they host Clemson. Is this the year that Paul Johnson is shown the door?
Yep. I don't see how he's going to get out of this job.
Yeah.
I really don't. And it started with South Florida.
Right.
When you went down there and you blew that game, and then you lose to Pitt the way you lose to them. You know, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if the players have lost interest in him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what has happened, but I don't expect for him to be on the sidelines for Georgia Tech next season. Clemson is probably going to put up 50.
They have to.
They would have to.
Yeah.
And that's even with Kelly Bryant. It doesn't matter what quarterback they put in.
I think Trevor Lawrence is gonna get significant time just being from down the road at Cartersville. I think the entire Cartersville, I think the Purple Hurricanes.
Yeah.
I think they are. I think the whole town is gonna come down and buy out Bobby Dowd, because you figure those Georgia Tech fans, they're gonna be outselling those. The secondary market is gonna be filled with Georgia Tech fans getting rid of their tickets, and then the Jackets host Bowling Green before going to Louisville. So
yeah, it just doesn't set up right. Bowling Green, that's a winnable game. They can go and get that game. But Louisville is not. Louisville's going to probably win 7 or 8 games this year. But I can say right now they're probably better than Georgia Tech.
And Clemson can take no prisoners this year. They lost. They actually lost. They were ranked number 2 last week.
Right.
And actually, they're ranked number 3 this time, and they didn't even lose.
Right.
So
Clemson is not. Clemson is probably the only team in college football, with the exception of Alabama, who doesn't have to worry about anything
right
now, especially in the ACC. That, as bad as the ACC looks right now, with the exception of Clemson, you know, I mean, their only shot would probably be Miami in the ACC championship game, but we'll see.
That's why they have to steamroll, because the fact is that since they do play in the ACC, mm-hmm. and like last year, you have Ohio State was actually kept out.
Yeah.
You know, and that was used against the Big Ten, I believe, was used against them.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you guys steamrolled, but you guys played in the Big Ten. So, therefore, Clemson does not want to be the Ohio State, does not want to be the 2018 version of Ohio State. They have to steamroll every game.
Exactly. And interesting thing for Clemson, though, I think Clemson really needs to get their quarterback situation straightened out. I think Dabo needs to say to everybody, either Kelly Bryant's our man or Trevor Lawrence is our man. Don't flip-flop back and forth, because that's going to create just a little bit of uncertainty. And when you're a college team, you don't want uncertainty. I think Dabo, as Nick Saban, doesn't care what other people think. He doesn't care what his fans think. He doesn't care what anybody thinks. Dabo, I think, cares a little bit what his fans think. And he's got to get rid of that. He's got to go with one guy and say, you know what, I don't care what you say, this is our guy.
Because what you're going to do is not only are you going to split up your locker room, but you're also going to split up the fan base.
Exactly.
You don't want a bigger problem than what you have now within. And now you have an in and out issue. No, you really don't want that if your dad was swinging. Or if you're the entire Clemson, football organization. So you don't want that.
Because God forbid the wrong thing happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Mm. Right. You get that over there.
So to bring it back home, if you're Georgia, you know, we got this, you know, do we let Crum roll for the rest of the year? Knowing that your future, because, I mean, with Justin Fields, that could bring in more recruits for the future. I'm not the boosters at Georgia. I'm not the head coach.
Right.
But if I am the head coach, I redshirt that young man after next week. Let Crum roll. You know what he could bring you. And let me play for the long game.
Yeah.
And let Justin Fields come out within next year is going to be Crum's last year.
Right.
So let him get to NFL.
Right. Let Crum do it for 2 years, and then it'll be Justin Fields'.
And he'll be well polished.
2 years. But you're talking about patience, and that's something that, I don't know, the kids have it, but I know that the parents don't have it.
Yeah, the parents and definitely the children. I know the children don't have it.
Yeah, so that you're preaching patience. And honestly, if I'm a number one recruit, and I'm looking at Georgia, do I want to go to a school where, even though I play really well and become the starter, that I'm going to get forced out for no fault of my own?
Exactly.
That's something that that would concern me.
Yeah. I agree.
All right, let's talk. Let's leave college football there for a moment. Quickly, let's talk about the MMA or boxing fight that we saw last night, or we paid pay per view and gave Showtime, HBO, whoever, Top Rank or whoever was handling that boatloads of money. Canelo GG3, what or GG3-2, however you want to call it. What did you guys think about it?
Well, if you guys don't know, Canelo Alvarez did defeat Triple G, handing him his first loss of his career.
Okay.
He won 115. Two judges scored at 115, 113, and one judge scored it even at 114. I actually scored this fight last night. I thought Triple G won this fight. I did. But it was a close fight. I had it 117, 113. It was a very, very close fight. It was something that boxing needed, but this middleweight division and this welterweight division, guys, this is now the new, what the heavyweight division once was.
Right.
Once upon a time, with Ali and Frazier and Holmes and Foreman. Of those guys, you know, with all the Foreman, you know, all of those guys. This is your modern day. There are so many great middleweights and welterweights, and last night I think they did their thing in that ring last night, and they were just incredible. Triple G kind of got out of his game a little bit. Wasn't like as physical as you thought he would be. But to me, I thought that he was the more consistent fighter. I thought he was connecting on his punches a little bit better than Canelo was.
Mm-hmm.
But Canelo got that decision because he was the busier fighter. And that's what they said last year. that he wasn't busy enough, and that's why it was a draw. This year, he was the busier fighter, and he got the victory. And I don't have a problem with it, because I love Canelo. I think he's a great fighter, but to me, I thought it was Triple G that won the fight.
But you said it earlier, you said it when you started your comments, he seemed to be a little out of sorts. Could that have affected the judge's ruling, kind of put him in a in the judge's negative mindset, so he would have had to, like, really go above and beyond to try and overcome what he did in the early part of the fight, and maybe he just didn't do that?
Yeah, I think that's what it was, John. I think it hit it right on the nail. I think that when I look at boxing, I think that is now judged on what you do in the latter part, at the beginning of the fight. And the first three or four rounds, I can honestly say Canelo Alvarez was the aggressor, and he won those rounds. And Triple G picked things up. So that left a lasting impression on the judges, and he continued to do that. So it would have been a difference if he dropped off and Triple G got better, but both men were steady, and they were consistent in their fight styles in that matchup. That's why Canelo got that victory.
So where does the fight game go from here?
There's a lot more. Canelo has tons of challenges out there. Keith Thurman, I've heard his name come up. Danny Swift Garcia is another name. He's another young lion out here.
We have the Pacquiao Mayweather.
I don't know.
Rematch looming over the horizon.
Do we really want?
That's the will it be the huge draw that it was the first time with?
Well, it is, because it's Floyd Mayweather.
With Pacquiao landing only 30% of his shots.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Floyd. If Floyd's going to stay retired.
That's right. And I was wondering the same thing. Like,
if you're going to do that, do it, man. You
gave us our 49 serious fights.
Mm-hmm.
Then you gave us one circus show.
Conor McGregor.
Right. So. What else is you, now? You're going to start repeating yourself,
right?
You know, fight. I mean, you know.
There was a headline. I think ESPN had it. Even though it was Canelo and Triple G, Floyd Mayweather still found a way to steal the headline.
Exactly.
Still found a way to steal the show by saying what he said. I don't know how true that's going to be, but you know, I mean, it's for entertainment. They're going to draw. That's going to be a big time payday for both those guys.
Right. And with the Triple G and Canelo fight, you know, though the margin of victory for Canelo was razor thin, they said that the tiebreaker, what pushed Canelo over the top was the fact that though Triple G was landing the jab at will, Canelo landed the more important shots.
Yeah, and that's another reason, John, why he was successful.
That's why, right? Why Canelo got the win. All right, well, we're coming close on the ends, as we always do here. We have things you may have missed from all three of us, and Leon's going to go first.
Well, what I wanted to touch on is the fact that during week one, we've seen a lot of nine-figure quarterbacks take L's. And very unimpressive L's at that.
Right.
And the question is, because in basketball, baseball, hockey, every single sport known to man, the best player gets the most money.
Right.
But for some strange reason in football, that is not the case. And I believe this is what led to the departure of Khalil Mack with the Raiders. Because I believe that Khalil Mack honestly believed that he's a better player than Derek Carr. And Derek Carr should not be getting more money than Khalil Mack. This is the root cause of the reason Julio Jones did not report to training camp for the Atlanta Falcons. Because Julio Jones, I believe, let's take all the analytics out and let's just give it the eye test. Julio Jones is the better player, is the best player in Atlanta Falcons by a long shot. If you go to the Baltimore Ravens, I believe that Terrell Suggs is the better player than Joe Flacco, which is the reason why after the 2014 Super Bowl victory that the Baltimore Ravens defense brought to the city, a lot of players departed after Joe Flacco was awarded that money. as a Charger fan, and I say as a Charger fan, I do not believe that Phillip Rivers deserves a 9-figure contract because we've only been to the playoffs 2 times in 10 years. I don't care how pretty your numbers are. At the end of the day, we could have went off and traded him, got better players, and missed the playoffs 8 out of the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Versus what's going on right now. We look at Eli Manning. Well, he's Eli, you know.
Right,
but
right.
You know, that was the reason why Odell Beckham gave such a fit during the offseason. He said he needs to be the highest paid player on the team. You know, it's not just about, you know, some people might, well, it's quarterback. But no, it's not about quarterback money. It's about, are you the best player on your team? If this was Tom Brady and the Patriots, I believe Tom Brady deserves that money because he's the best player on their team.
Right.
But when we look at basketball, it doesn't matter who, you know, is the best player on the team. Whoever the best player of the team is going to get the most money.
Exactly.
Whether it be Chris Paul, Patrick Ewing, Shaquille O'Neal, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James. I mean, it doesn't matter what position you're playing. So I think that's something that needs to be looked into the NFL, you know, and I think it would make a lot of teams better, you know, in my humble opinion.
Exactly. Daniel.
Last week we saw something that was quite interesting in the NFL. There were new NFL head coaches. There were 7 of them. And I don't have time to tell you who they are. So
yeah.
We will, you know, just look them up, folks. But something interesting happened. For the first time in NFL history, teams that had new head coaches went 0-7 in week 1 in 2018. I found that to be, I don't know if it was disheartening or what, but just some of the names, John Gruden, Matt Patricia, a lot of those guys took shots to the chin on their first week of the season. Hopefully those guys will turn their fortunes around and get better. You guys know I'm a numbers guy. I don't think that week 1 will... I don't think week 1 will define what we see for the rest of the year, but what I'm seeing from a lot of these new head coaches, they probably might need to switch some things around just so that they'll have a successful year.
Exactly. And one thing I wanted to talk about is the Troy Trojans. For the second time in as many seasons, they took what we call a pay game, basically go to a Power 5 school to absorb a beatdown. And they turned it around. Last year they spoiled LSU's homecoming. This year Nebraska was the victim. So next year, because now their pay games have already been established for the next 3 seasons. Next year they are supposed to go. The Trojans are supposed to go visit Missouri. Now if I'm Missouri, I've got that contract in my hand. I'm looking through it furiously, trying to find a loophole to get out of that game. I don't want any part of the Trojans, and this is why. Some teams, some really good power mid-5 teams cannot schedule games against the top schools because the top schools don't want to risk losing to these guys.
Exactly.
It is such a – that's why Georgia State has such problems on the basketball side. It's almost like it doesn't – when you're a mid-major, it doesn't pay to be good. As Sam Crenshaw mentioned, the only way Georgia State can get Georgia on the schedule is to go to the Cayman Islands and hope that – your results will mesh so that you can play in the final rounds.
You just had to rub it in, huh, John?
Exactly. I'm sorry about that. Well, that's going to wrap us up for the last 3 guys to do a podcast. Thank you very much for listening to us. As always, you can reach out to us, John_Morgo on Twitter. Leave us a comments here on SoundCloud or any of the mobile devices that you can pick us up. We really appreciate your listenership, and we hope to grow with us as we try to develop this product and bring it forward. We'll have another discussion next week. Hopefully we'll have another guest, but for right now,
Daniel Boats,
Leon Brown,
I'm John Morgo. Thank you very much for tuning us in. We'll be with you next week. This has been the last 3 guys to do a podcast, and have a good night, everybody.